Good evening. Welcome to Good News Updates from Compassion. I'm excited to be joined tonight by Penny from Murphy's, California. Welcome, Penny.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. This is two in a row, Michael.
This is two in a row. Yes, we had some technical challenges before, didn't we?
Yes.
And I just heard an echo of them a moment ago.
Yeah, but right now sounds okay.
Right now sounds great. Yeah. And, you know, I've heard Sherry say that nothing stands up under scrutiny.
Yeah.
And that's my experience with these technology problems as well, is that sometimes it just requires a renewed willingness to keep looking at it and seeing how things work.
Yeah.
Penny, are these the times that we've been practicing for?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I suppose all times are the times we've been practicing for. But, you know, a while ago there was a peace quote. I think probably most of your listeners know that we send out a daily peace quote if people want it. And the peace quote was by a Greek philosopher, and it was, "What ought one to say then as each hardship comes? I was practicing for this. I was training for this." And what we found at the monastery recently in group and just in living compassion meetings and things like that is we find ourselves returning to that quote because, you know, as you know, these are difficult times that we seem to be in and with no particular end in sight to their difficulty. And it really does seem that that these truly are the kinds of times that we practice for, to be able to be resilient and to see them as just the latest thing that life is bringing. And so we find ourselves returning to the quote and really feeling like, yes, this is what I've been training for.
This is what I've been training for. This is what I've been practicing for.
Yeah.
And my experience of it as a result of practice is that there's more of a response available rather than just a, oh my goodness, reaction and kind of scramble to, you know, right the ship.
Yeah.
I feel much more skilled, like I have much more tools available to me that really allow me to take this moment as a fresh moment, and how am I able to respond to that?
Right. And, you know, it strikes me as I'm listening to us that if you don't practice, if you don't have a practice or you don't have the tools, it can sound sort of like a Pollyannish kind of thing, you know, like, oh, well, this, you know, we'll make the best of it. And it's not like that, is it? It's that we truly have some skills, living skills, life skills, to bring to tough times that provide possibilities for us. So we're not just stuck in a set of conditioned responses that we haven't challenged, we haven't questioned, we don't even know are conditioned. But we're able to see when we respond to things where we're coming from and how it is or isn't helpful, and then just get back to the moment and trust that in the moment there are possibilities that we cannot find from conditioning.
Uh-huh. So in the moment, there are possibilities that are simply not available to us when we are listening to conditioning, being guided by conditioning and like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing that we've really been talking about at the monastery, and I think part of why we wanted to talk about this on the radio show tonight, was that that the monastery, not only do we have a personal toolbox from practice, but the monastery and the practice are always offering tools, and that this is a really good time to take advantage of all the things that are offered. This radio show, email classes, you know, Sherry just started a class available to everyone that's a support group. It's an email support group, and you can write in and say, this is what's going on for me, and this is why it's difficult, and help. and other people can too, and then Sherry will pick kind of the themes of any given, you know, few-day period and respond to those and also provide more of the examples of what people are writing in so you don't feel so alone. And then there's, you know, retreats and workshops and the books and CDs and the archives of this show and the peace quotes and the voices and the little monk stories. And all of these things are they're offerings from the monastery that we and the whole Zen practice that have been consistently offered over time, but it just feels like this, of all times, is a great time to plug in and nurture ourselves and steep ourselves in the kind of tools and messages that we get from these sources, because all the messages out in the world, at least as I look at the papers and the internet, are pretty much like we're in terrible trouble and we really don't know what to do.
Uh-huh. Yes, in my experience as well, it's just pretty much doom and gloom and when are we going to hit bottom and
mm-hmm.
and like that.
Yeah.
And as you're talking, for me, it's an experience of the practice is like it's an anchor for me in my
mm-hmm.
life. No matter how stormy the sea is or calm is, I can know that I can rely on that as an anchor.
Right. It's a place to stand. Yeah.
Yes. And the other thing that occurs to me, you were talking about the skills that we develop with practice. It feels like from conditioning, I'm always trying to put the round peg in the square hole. And even though it's pretty obvious that it doesn't fit, I just have no other alternatives.
Yeah.
It's like I'm just hitting my head against the wall.
Yeah, because all we have is the peg.
Yes.
You know? It doesn't matter what it fits. It's all we have.
Yes.
Yeah. But
yes.
if we're able to see, oh, it's a round hole. I wonder what one does with a round hole.
Yes.
Then you know, there's what a much wider repertoire of possibilities.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah.
I was just thinking in relation to this topic that I remember that when the Iraq War was about to start, and it was very, for me anyway, very upsetting news, and I was immersed in the news, and it was depressing. And I remember just coming to one day and saying, you know, I've got to nurture myself. This is not healthy what I'm doing here. And so I began to steep myself in things that were inspirational and supportive and many of those were the tools of practice we're talking about. And it feels like I found it hugely helpful. And it just feels like this is another one of those times. And at the monastery, the invitation from the practice is always, you know, dip in deeper and you will find the resources you need.
Uh-huh. Yes. Invitation from the monastery always to dig in deeper and you'll find the resources that you need.
Yeah.
And I remember saying on this radio show a week or so ago that I really need to immerse myself in the practice. I need
yeah.
to swim in it so that it is everything I see, everything I hear, everything I feel. And it sounds like that's what you were doing at the time the Iraq War started.
Yeah, I think that's what the quote is pointing to. You know, as we face hardships, that not only is this what we have been practicing for, but this is where to practice. You know,
yes,
this is the moment to swim in it, as you say. You know, to dive in and make this the process we're involved in, not the processes of conditioning in response to the processes of the world that are very scary.
Yes, yes, indeed, well stated. And I remember what's coming up for me now is I think it was a couple of years ago, sort of the sense that whatever is coming up for me in my life, it's going to pass through the funnel of practice.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way I'm going to work with whatever this is.
Yeah, that's a good
and it's
image.
Really, it's really for me. I know that when I do that, I'm going to end up in a much more helpful place than my other approaches.
Yeah, yeah, and it doesn't mean that things will be necessarily not difficult. You know, it doesn't mean people won't lose their jobs and people won't be dealing with financial crisis and that kind of thing. It's just as you say, through the funnel of practice, our experience of them is different. And we don't have to be taken under by them.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes.
I also think that that one of the things that this kind of a time provides is a really creative opportunity. I hope that we can, as a Sangha, and as people, you know, coming kind of into the practice and curious about the practice, I hope we can find ways to approach this particular period of time as a really creative opportunity that forces us out of our accustomed patterns and our assumptions about how life just is.
Yes, yes. And particularly with the mindset that you're describing, I mean, the result can only be good, it seems like,
mm-hmm.
when we're bringing that attitude of mind and creativity to these challenging circumstances. And what was coming up for me a minute ago, also as you were talking, was this sense of adequacy for our lives.
Yes, that's right. That's one of the first things I ever heard Sherry say. We are adequate to our lives.
Yes.
Yeah, and keeping that faith is what practice enables us to do, I think.
Yes, absolutely, especially when times are challenging like these.
Yeah.
Penny, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Michael.
Two times. This is great. We'll go for a third sometime in the future.
Okay. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Penny.
Bye.
Bye. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually better after listening to that conversation.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought I was pretty good before.
That's
but it's just... what you're talking about is so much what I've been looking at recently, and what you're both articulating about this practice and about the Sangha and how it has been and what's possible for us as we move forward into these as we like to refer to them challenging times, and. So it was good to, it's just always good to reflect on why we practice, you know, what practice is, why we do it, what it offers us, and to help ourselves recommit to it. At times, particularly when the voices heat up and try to convince us that there's a better way to approach life, like being hysterical and worry and, you know, surfing the internet looking for the latest horror story, but to commit to practice in the way that you folks were talking about. It's very good. And I was thinking, you're talking about the people could listen in and think that it sounds kind of Pollyanna-ish, and then when Penny was talking about the Iraq War starting and being immersed in that. News has to, you know, the little fingers are in the sky making quotes, just whipping people up into a state of hysteria, and then turning back to the practice and using the practice as a point of sanity, if you will. And I could imagine somebody listening to that and saying, yeah, and that's great, you know, you feel better, but how does that help anybody who's being bombed or, all the soldiers going over there who are in their families and the people who aren't going to come back and what that's going to be like for everybody. And to me, the response to it, and this is a big part of what I've been thinking about over the last couple of weeks, is that then we look at how we would like to participate in the solution. So if I too was opposed to the war, and not surprising, and there was nothing I could do about it. You know, as a citizen of a country, there really isn't anything that you can do. You can protest all you would like, but if your government is going to take your country to war, that's what's going to happen. But what we can do is look around and say, all right, then do I want to do some fundraisers for the families that are left behind? Do I want to find out if there's some kind of support system for widows who are going to come into existence as a result of this. You know, do I want to work with the soldiers who are coming back? What do I want to do to try to be of assistance rather than the two choices of I want to immerse myself in this in a conditioned way that makes me and everybody else around me miserable, or I want to, excuse me, pretend that it's not happening and escape. You know, I am here. I am a participant. And so how would I like my participation to manifest?
Yes, and it sounds to me what you're describing is there's the conditioned duality of, you know, do nothing or immerse yourself and be upset. And then there's the middle way, which is,
yes,
really, in my experience, very broad and very wide.
Yes.
Even though conditioning would have us believe it's not the case.
Yeah, all kinds of things that are possible. So quickly, because I'm sure there are people waiting to talk to us tonight, but people will ask me about going to Africa and how is it not being with those people who are starving to death, how is it not so depressing that you just can't stand it? And my response is, I keep focused on what we can do. I stay focused on what we are doing. I look at the children who are not starving. I look at the lives that are being turned around and the possibilities opening for the people for whom they are opening. And that inspires me and deepens my commitment to do more. And if I let myself just get lost in my own feelings of sadness, and isn't it awful and it shouldn't be this way, it's not. If that approach would feed children, I would be all over it. But it doesn't. And so what I feel I'm required to do is do my practice so that I can face whatever life offers me in the most compassionate, peaceful, open-hearted, helpful way that that I can see in any given moment. And that, to me, that's the best that we can do. You know, nobody ever, nothing in this universe ever guaranteed us an easy ride. We make it up that it should be that way, but it doesn't exist anywhere, which is really good evidence that we're making it up. You know, we see no evidence that life should be any other way than the way it is. And so it seems to me that jumping in and attempting to, quoting our good friend Gandhi here, but attempting to be the difference that we see as possible in the world seems like not only the very best thing that we can do, but the best thing that we can offer.
Yeah. I'm in 100% agreement.
Yeah. Good. So anyway, it was lovely good news. I really appreciated it.
Great.
And I'm hoping, you know, this is what people can watch for as we go forward. More and more, this practice is going to be focused on, okay, yes, life is difficult. It's increasingly difficult for us. It's been difficult for most of the world all along. So how are we going to make a difference? What are we going to do? Come on. We are the people with the resources. So how are we going to use those resources to bring a sense of peace and comfort and hope and possibility to our own hearts and lives? And then how do we extend that to others who may be having even more difficulty finding what they need?
Amen, sister.
All right. You're in, brother.
I'm in.
All right.
Sherry, we have a number of callers here.
All right. Let's stop talking then. Let's get me stop talking so that some of them can have a chance to talk.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Great to hear you
both
tonight.
What's going on in your world, Todd?
Well, I'm fulfilling a commitment I made a week ago.
Uh-huh.
And it feels great to fulfill it and call into the show.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
And it was really fun to watch.
Practice, a big part of practice.
Oh. Yes.
Make decisions.
Yeah.
Commitments. Say what you're going to do and then do them. Prove to yourself that you're a person who can be trusted. So that's very good, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I'm also in the LBK class and following the December email class as well. And that was just listening to the good news and listening to you and Michael at the beginning of this is just that participation part and seeing the practice move into, which is my aspiration for my second project, is of service.
Yes.
Be of service in my community, which I haven't done.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I'm seeing why I haven't done it, because the voices of self-hate for me have kept me from it. They kept me from wanting to open my heart to others because I haven't been even able to really take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And now with this LBK class and the support of Sangha, and I've been to a couple of the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreats, the self-mentoring I've got now, I've gotten to a place now that I can go beyond that fear and extend myself beyond myself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's such a good point that you're making, because what conditioning wants us to believe is, I can't do anything for anybody else. I can't even take care of myself.
Yes.
Or I'm not taking care of myself. You know, I still need so much. How can I do anything for anybody else? And
right.
It's in the doing for somebody else that we find what we need for ourselves. It's like a little magic trick.
Right. This is what I'm discovering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did that email come out through the Living Beyond Karma class about the study that I recently read, the happiest people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Isn't that something? The happiest people serve others, do for others, and don't watch television.
And it's funny you say that, because my television watching has reduced 80% on this LBK class.
Isn't that good?
80%.
Amazing. It's amazing how much life you have available, right?
I just get so much more done.
Yeah.
Or I'm, you know, my sitting practice is more solid, all my little tools I use, and all the, you know, the reassurance tapes and the conference calls and listening to the archives and rereading. There's another one. I've got all this time to do these things now to support my practice, which I didn't do when I was watching TV.
Exactly.
So it was kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah. And again, people are told that what conditioning says to them at the end of the day, I'm so exhausted. I'm just going to go home and get that pizza and get that beer and get on that sofa and watch TV and relax and take care of myself.
That's right.
It is such a wrong direction, isn't it?
It is. And another interesting thing I saw, because one of the assignments was before practice and after practice, is my beer drinking activity also dropped away.
Wow.
And the desire to drink and to numb myself through alcohol has dropped away.
Yeah.
And I don't drink. I don't have a desire to drink, which is it's startling me after 35 years of drinking.
Right.
It's like,
and isn't it beautiful that you didn't have to make yourself stop?
No, I didn't make myself stop. It was sort of just kind of an internal problem. My mentor just sort of went, you know, the voices still say, have a drink. But
right.
My mentor goes, no, we don't have to.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I don't want to miss the moment.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't like the way I feel now when I drink, because I become unconscious.
Yeah.
And my awareness is so much more heightened now because my practice has deepened, that when I drink, and that numbing effect and that kind of intoxication is artificial.
Yeah.
It feels unnatural.
Yeah, it used to feel good.
Used to feel,
compared to the kind of misery of unconsciousness.
Right.
Right? So it kind of an oblivious unconsciousness, obliterated unconsciousness, but
well,
better.
You know, this is what maintained it for me. Is you're right. Use it to escape severe emotional suffering.
Yeah.
But I
now that you've learned how to be with yourself and take care of yourself and be happy present in the moment, nobody wants to escape that.
No. No, you're right. You're right. Can I just quickly interject something I'm looking at really currently?
Sure.
And have some feedback on it from you, because I just love your take on parenting.
Oh,
every time I hear you talk about parenting, I'm just like, you know, with bated breath, because I just love your take on it. And I've got the parenting book for parents. I've read it many times, so I think a lot of your stuff is in there. But the thing I'm seeing now, just stolen from the December email class, is my current Wilbury is my 14-year-old son.
Uh-huh.
And he is definitely giving me tons of opportunity to practice. Because
you're good
all the
like
things,
that.
Yeah. All the things he's doing now is what I got severely beaten physically and emotionally for when I was that age.
Uh-huh.
Mirroring is so, so amazing. But what my conditioning is telling me is that I'm punishing him. But what my heart is saying is I'm setting healthy boundaries. And I'm just struggling with, I want to encourage him and guide him to do certain things. And then my voice is screaming and say, but you're conditioning him to do something.
Okay. So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you talk with him about this stuff?
Yes.
Okay. So he knows what you're doing. He knows what goes on with this, what your motivation is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting. Many times through that conversation, he'll start in his heart, and then he'll go into his voices, and he'll shut down.
Oh, yeah.
and he'll get, you know, caustic, and he'll get a bird, you know, he'll get kind of defensive,
yeah.
and then he'll leave the room because they don't want to hear it.
Right. Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you talk to him about your process?
No.
Right.
I don't.
At age 14,
Sherry, can I rephrase that? I do sometimes. I do sometimes, and my conditioning jumped in and told me that I don't, but it's not true. They lie.
Okay.
I have talked to them about my process, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I always encourage with parenting is, of any age, but especially with teenagers because it's so delicate.
It is.
Is to keep it really casual.
Ah.
When you have an insight about yourself that it actually is kind of vulnerable,
yes,
just casually share it with him. Not into a big, let me teach you about this, but just, you know what I've just realized is blah, blah, blah. And he may not even say anything, but he's listening. And so he's getting a couple of things. One, he's getting a window into what goes on with an adult, which is at 14, still quite mysterious.
Yes.
And he's learning that it's okay to talk about your interior workings.
I like that.
Yeah. And so, you know, sometimes you know, you can warn him that you're going to go on about this longer than he's going to want to hear and you're sorry.
Yeah.
You know, if you didn't love him, you know, it wouldn't be a problem because he would be living somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But you do love him and you're a dad and this is just what you have to suffer through with parents. So sit down and suffer.
Yes.
But then most of the time, keep it very light and casual and much more a focus on what you're doing with your life than what he's doing with his. You talk about you,
mm-hmm.
which will invite him to talk about him.
Ah, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about me and encourage him to talk about him. Yes.
Yeah, because it's shared that way. Otherwise, it's such an uneven relationship. And by the time you're 14, even though all the adults in your life would agree you're not an adult, you feel way too grown up to be treated like a child.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, and then let us know.
I will.
All right.
Michael,
thanks, Todd.
Harry, again, fantastic gratitude for showing up so I can show up. Love the practice. Love the show.
Our pleasure. Thanks. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I love those success stories.
Uh-huh. It's wonderful, isn't it? I was just thinking, boy, when I wish when I was 14 I'd had a parent who was doing what Todd's doing. Can you imagine?
I cannot imagine.
Mm-mm. It would just be so amazing to have adults in your life who, grown-ups in your life, adults who are actually grown-ups, you know, who are taking responsibility and looking inward and looking at themselves in that way that teaches how you can see things that you want to work on about yourself and not have any self-hate involved, not have to do it out of a sense of judgment or criticism, but just, wow, there's more that's possible. I want to pursue that. What a gift.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, the willingness and the courage I project.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry, we have a couple more callers here.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air. And could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is George.
Hey, George.
Hey, Sherry. Hey, Michael.
Hi, George.
How's it going in your part of the world?
Well, it's very interesting lately. Self-hate is on the warpath.
Uh-oh.
And telling me, giving me a line that somebody is believing, at least some of the time, enough of the time to get me, to get us concerned.
Uh-huh.
As you know, I've gone through decades of this bipolar thing, pattern, which is an old pattern at this point. It feels really old, and it feels. But anyway, self-hate is telling me that it's not okay that my two latest projects were neither successful nor did they make any money. In fact, one of them lost a considerable amount of money, so that's a bad thing. And there's really something wrong with the way I go about doing things, and therefore I really am an inferior person after all, just as has always been said. Everyone I compare myself to seems to be doing more with their lives than I am, and not making enough contribution.
Wait. Mm-hmm. Everybody's self-hate compares you to.
Right.
You get information from self-hate that they are doing a better job.
Right. This is self-hate talking. All of this is self-hate talking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not making enough of a contribution. It's because there really is something wrong with me.
Here's the deal. Here's the deal about that. You know, this is where we put into play that part of practice that says, this is not helpful. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to entertain this any longer.
Right.
Right?
Yep,
because of course it says that.
Of course. Yeah.
It will always say that. Mm-hmm. You could be newly elected savior of the world.
Right.
Okay, and self-hate would be waiting right there for a moment to get a word in there and let you know that this really doesn't mean anything and it's actually not true and all you've done is fooled a lot of people and who you really are is because that's what it is and that's what it does.
Well, it actually depends on how it wants to play it. Because it could play it that you are the savior of the world.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Although, that's
how it keeps the bipolarity going. That's how it keeps that duality game going.
It is the world of opposites.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
So for that, there is no answer except to turn your attention away from it.
Yeah.
Now, The other part of that, we had an interesting call, I don't know if it was last week or a couple of weeks ago, with a fellow who, I don't know if you listen to the archives, but it might be a helpful one for you. He was talking about doing certain things and then hearing the voice say, well, that's okay. And what we were talking about was the difference between that kind of response and actual mentoring. Because it is okay that what you're doing has not produced the results that you want.
Mm-hmm.
It is okay. It is okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That happens with all of us all the time.
Well, yeah. One of the quotes from Transform Your Life has been very helpful. The one from Winston Churchill where he says, success is going from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm.
Isn't that great?
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a real antidote for me right
oh,
now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And within that,
of course, self-hate comes. Yeah, go ahead.
There might also be room for, so if I, you know, I want to build pianos. And so I set out to build pianos, and my pianos keep looking a little more like coffins than pianos,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And so there would be the voices of self-hate, you know, just ready to just beat me bloody because I'm not building the right piano.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's fine that I haven't yet built the piano that's going to grace Carnegie Hall. And it might be a good time to apprentice myself to a piano maker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have to do everything myself.
Right.
And I don't have to do everything the way I've been taught to do it.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's one of the ways, of course, that self-hate continues to be able to get to us. It talks us into doing things the same way.
Mm-hmm.
A way that is probably not going to work, and then beats us up for it not working.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's very good regularly to shuffle the cards,
yeah,
and start over again. Okay, it's true.
Yeah.
I've done this 3 times, and I haven't gotten the results that I want. Now, what other information is there?
Mm-hmm.
Who might assist me in taking a different direction, getting more
mm-hmm.
tools, whatever
mm-hmm.
it is? Because it's not simply that either or of I need to do it the same way I've always done it and not fall for the self-hate.
Mm-hmm.
I need not to fall for the self-hate, and I'm freed up to do things any way I want to do them.
Right, to move on,
to
the process.
On.
Yeah,
right. It's
yeah,
the
take
people
the next
who,
step. Yeah,
yeah,
open the next
people,
door, whatever it is, yeah.
People who stay in the same job or the same relationship because the voices are saying, you know, if you were the right person, you would be able to be happy in these circumstances.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, it is possible to be happy in any circumstances, but it's not a contest.
Right.
First we end the self-hatred, then we look around and say, okay, without all that self-hatred, how would I like my life to be?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Good. So that just opens you up to all kinds of new projects, and we have no idea how they'll turn out.
It does, and we don't.
Isn't that exciting?
And there's no urgency about it. You know, that's another
no
thing
urgency.
That I've noticed with this whole thing of, you know, self-hate telling me all this stuff and saying, and of course now, you know, it's a time, now is the time for you to get depressed and stay depressed for months and, you know, plod along with your life and you know, go catatonic and all of that. And so there's this urgency like, I've got to stop this. I've got to prevent this from happening. I've got to, you know, I've got to do this. I've got to do that. Well, and there is, in a sense, there is like a tug of war. You know, on the one hand, there's the feeling that, you know, I just relax and accept whatever this is and, you know, whatever feelings come up and so on and so forth. And that's part of it. But the other part of it is like, you know, I'm going to duke it out this time. You know, I'm not going to be an easy target. In fact,
well,
I'm going to.
Gandhi
yeah.
keeps coming into my mind here.
Uh-huh.
Or you know, we could go with Martin Luther King Jr.
The worthy opponent.
You know, that's right. But it's
yeah.
not aggressive.
Yeah.
You know, it's more, I'm not going to go away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can keep doing your worst, and I'm going to keep being here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be here in a way that is as centered and kind
mm-hmm.
and loving and interested and engaged as is possible for me to be.
Yeah.
And it's not going to have anything to do with performance or any kind of contest that
mm-hmm.
that ego might want to set me up in. It's not going to have to do with how much energy I do or do not have on any particular day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just
mm-hmm.
going to keep showing up.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to give up.
Nope.
Yeah. I'm going
yeah.
to keep looking. I'm going to keep seeking guidance from the mentor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Coming back to center and being grateful for every day of life that I have.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Sounds good.
Your assignment.
I accept
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Doris.
All right. See you.
Good night.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I would like to mention our wonderful sponsors.
Yes.
Who have been with us for quite some time, very supportive of Open Air. First one is Porch Dog Software. Their website is porchdogsoft.com. They make custom software for Macs and PCs, and from all I hear, they do great work.
Yeah, and so if somebody wants something done along those lines and isn't sure if it's possible or what would be involved, they can just contact our friends at Porch Dog and get some guidance and direction and good products.
Yes, absolutely. And I definitely know that you will get great responsiveness and have a wonderful experience with them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to listen to great music, check out the Zen Blues Quartet at zenbluesmusic.com. And they're making a very generous offer for Living Compassion. For any CDs purchased up through this year, they'll donate 20% of the sales to Living Compassion.
Isn't that great?
And that feeds a lot of children.
It does. It does. It most assuredly does.
Most assuredly does.
Speaking of which, I want to do a little commercial for something new that's going on around our place. We've been talking with people endlessly about the One Thing Revolution, and I hope to goodness they're joining in. Talk about something that we can do to make a difference on this planet of ours. But the meal tickets. I'm hoping that people will go on the website if they haven't heard about them and check out this new thing that is available through Keep It Simple, where you buy these little business card looking things, and each one of them provides a meal for a child in Cantalomba, and you can put them with your holiday gifts. You can write little thank yous on them. You can leave them for people when you leave a tip. You can say thanks so much for your service and put the little card. And every little card has purchased a meal for a child and also spreads the word about the fact that it's very easy to make a contribution that will directly affect the life of a child on the other side of the world. So I'm hoping that people, everybody I've talked to about them, everybody I've shown them to, just gets so excited about them. It's such a fun idea, such a simple thing. You can get a little package of them, put them in somebody's stocking, and take them, you know, great for work, those little gifts that you never know what to get somebody.
Yes, I think it's really fun.
Well, yeah.
And it reminds me of how your books have made their way around the world in all kinds of crazy ways.
Yes, it's
yeah.
true.
And these cards, you know, I was just saying, I could leave one on the bus. I could leave one at the dentist.
Yes.
You know, and
yes.
it's just a great way to put it out there without, you know, going up to somebody and saying, hey, do you want to hear about, you know, it's
precisely.
Just a little card.
Yeah,
you got a little card and a little URL, and you just put it out there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And let those little cards find friends for those children everywhere around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. And since you're mentioning wonderful things, I wanted to mention a couple things, one of which is that there's a great New Year's retreat at the
yes,
end
there
of the year. It's going to be in Marin County, a place called Santa Sabina, which is very beautiful, I understand. And we'll meditate into the new year.
Yes, very fun.
Yes.
Lots of good workshops and introspection and walks and good food and yoga and great way. You know, that's the Buddhist thing. The way you end one year is the way you will spend the next year. That's why we always meditate into the new year. And so to add to that, spending it with supportive people, eating good food and taking care of your body and your spirit and your heart and all of that, that's the way we want the next year to go. So that's the way we're going to celebrate the close of this one.
Wonderful. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, we have three more callers here.
All right.
Next call, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Susan calling from Los Angeles.
Hello, Susan.
Hi, I've called several times in the past, and I was just actually checking back in to update you that on what I've done. So, because it's good. I was the person that called who'd been in a long-term relationship and having a giant conversation in my head all by myself about talking to my husband about staying together or not staying together, and finally made the leap and talked to him about it, and it was really a relief, frankly, because he'd been thinking about the same things but not saying anything either. So I just wanted to call back and say thank you for the support and encouragement and because and nothing's changed in terms of are we not, but it took a huge charge out of the situation. It went
yes.
from 80% of mind capacity to 20.
Uh-huh.
And
I would imagine, I think one of the things that we talked about was you've been together, what, 28 years or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that, however it goes, you want it to happen in a way that honors the amount of your lives that you've spent together, and I think the children that you've produced,
yeah.
Right? And so this sounds like a big step toward accomplishing that. That you,
yeah.
If the two of you will work on this, you'll figure it out together. What's best
yeah,
for both of you?
Yeah, well, I think the last thing you said to me in the last call was something about finding a way to do it with compassion, which I realized after I found that what has sort of hung me up in doing it alone is sort of not compassionate to me, or but that's not my style to begin with, to not do things with compassion. I was sort of at war with myself,
uh-huh.
And that, you know, it meant probably more time and different than what I pictured, not exactly my plan, but that I really couldn't do it any other way and feel okay.
Uh-huh.
That was going to have to be. But what was amazing to me was just, it was like a huge balloon deflating once I started talking and, you know,
yes.
Crying. And it's still there, the conversation. It's sort of running in the background, but it's not the whole operating system.
Yes, and you know, what you've seen about this is just huge for everybody all the time. That's what conditioned mind does. It wants to get a person alone and isolated and then obsessing about something that's wrong so that conversation and conditioning can just, as you saw, it just has all of your life force.
Yeah.
Your whole life is focused on this imaginary thing.
Yeah, and in part of even opening up talking about, because I realize it also, you know, I can feel myself starting to build again. Okay, it's time for, because we talked about it for several conversations, to bring it up again and see where it is now. It's like reverse giving birth to a baby. I don't know how to explain it, but and I have lost my train of thought about it because I had another realization about that whole process of being isolated.
Yeah. You want to go with that one?
Yeah, it just, I know what it is. Losing control. You know, it's like if I take the conversation out of my head, I have this sense of I'm going to lose control. Not that I knew that. But when I look back now, I realize when I open this up, it's two people at the table, not one.
Okay. Now, you've got your moon boots on here making spiritual leaps, okay? Because mm-hmm. what you actually, I project, experienced
mm-hmm.
in that
mm-hmm.
is that ego is losing control. So it had complete control of you as long as it had you alone and isolated. As soon as you brought your husband into the conversation, conditioned mind no longer had the same control over you.
Yeah.
Now, what's so important about this spiritually is mm-hmm. that when we're in this system, we can't it's very, very difficult to tell what is conditioning and what is me. What is ego and what is my authentic being?
Mm-hmm.
And you just had a huge experience of that difference. Because what felt like it lost control was actually ego, not you. You mm-hmm. were actually the one who said, yeah, I want to have this conversation because I want to do this in a compassionate way.
Mm. Yeah, and it made me feel better about myself, you know.
Of course it did.
But
of course it did.
Yeah, it was a different self than the other one or the other person that was talking.
That's right.
Much more vulnerable.
That's right.
And to realize that what really was hanging me up was compassion, not fear. You know,
precisely.
I couldn't. So I'm grateful. I also went to the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat.
Oh.
A few weeks ago. Yeah. And I just
have
to say,
you are having a big time.
I'm on a roll here.
You certainly are.
It's time. It's really time. You know, empty nest.
Oh,
I'm going to leap. But I just wanted to say that it was really wonderful. And I had gone thinking I will learn things. That was my paradigm. This is about learning. What I came away with was a sense of being healed, which is very
true.
I did learn things, but
yeah.
this core level, some level of being healed, and I still have that frame of reference inside of me, like, oh, my gosh, I'm different. And that was a huge surprise.
Yeah. Now, let me connect one other thing up for you to just consider.
Okay.
What you had a chance to experience was who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
As compared to that conditioned personality that was trained to go around in the world and, you know, have all these thoughts and beliefs and assumptions and all that. And what you got, that healing that takes place, is
mm-hmm.
you getting to experience who you really are. And it is life-changing, isn't it?
Yeah, and it still feels like I have a small foothold. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but I don't think it's going to go away. Is
oh,
what
no.
I know. I know that I'm a little bit different. And the other thing, I think, as you talk, what I realize is my whole life I've always said I feel so alone. But I think now what the loneliness is, the not talking,
yes.
all those thoughts, you know, it creates
yes.
that sense of aloneness.
Yes, and and you were lonely for your heart.
Mm. Oh, that makes me sad, yeah.
You know? So then when you have that experience of really coming back to yourself, of trusting yourself, of realizing who you really are, that's when we start moving into that place of there's no reason to be lonely. I'm not separate from anything.
Yeah. I have more moments of that. I just haven't mm-hmm. had words for it.
That's right. Yeah.
Because
which is fine.
Say,
we don't really need the words. It just the experience is what we're going for.
But I'm always kind of, well, I was going to say struggling, but I know I'm always trying to get there somehow. I usually say I'm trying to connect, but it's that kind of like I'm always kind of shifting gears, trying to find a place. I guess it's in my heart where I feel connected to whoever or whatever's happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I just wanted to update you and let you know and tell you about
I am so glad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. So stay in touch, okay?
I will. I'm sure there'll be more conversations, but I didn't want to leave everybody hanging. Did she or did she not ever talk to him?
That's right.
She did.
She did. And she is. And one other quick thing. I don't know if we talked about this, but one other quick thing. As you two are going through this process, I don't. Do you know about imago therapy?
You know, actually, we did imago therapy. We did
uh-huh.
that for a couple of years, many, many years ago when we were having a rough, not many years ago, like 6 years
it
ago.
It might be a really interesting thing to do as you go through this reverse birthing process.
Okay.
You know, just that ability to have somebody help you hear one another.
Okay.
You know, not with any result in mind.
Okay.
Not this is going to result in divorce or we're going to stay together for not anything. Just to help the conversation, help you really be present to and hear one another.
That's and particularly if when you say no result, because as soon as I think it's a result, then I get quiet again. Do you know what I mean?
That's right.
So,
yep.
So if it's just hearing, I can
yep.
do that with a lot less fear than this has got to go somewhere or not go
yeah.
somewhere. That,
yeah.
That's really
just
helpful.
Just an honoring of the relationship. You know, how,
okay.
wherever it goes, to feel like you put whatever is necessary into being as clear as you each can be.
Mhm. Mhm. Okay. Yeah. And we have somebody that we use then that we could call again. It probably would be helpful because it's still
yeah.
pretty. It's still
hard.
Scary. Yeah. It's
oh yeah.
Hard.
It's hard. It's scary. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's big.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you have a baby, you know ultimately how it's going to end up. This I don't know. And
right.
So, but I don't want to stop at the same time.
That's right. You want to keep growing. And
yeah,
I suspect he does too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he actually said to me at one point, he said, well, you know, maybe it would be more of an adventure for both of us if we weren't together. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, there's a positive thought versus some big tragedy, or, you know, it doesn't...
Exactly.
More of a dissolution than a rearing things apart. Okay.
Well, and, you know, we don't have models for this in this culture. We don't. But it's possible to have any kind of relationship with anybody. So there is nothing to say two people can't go from a long marriage to being very good friends.
Right, right. And that's where the compassion piece comes up.
Absolutely.
Create something. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Mary.
Stay in touch.
I'll talk to you. I will. Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I'm so inspired by the callers who join us on the air here.
Mm. Yeah, a lot of good work going on out there, huh?
Yes.
Or I guess it would be in there, huh?
Yes. Yes, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. We have two more callers in the queue here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Karen from Chico.
Hey, Karen. How are you?
I'm good. I got myself out of work, and I'm parked on a side street in the dark with my cell phone. I just thought I'm gonna listen to this show, and I'm gonna call in tonight, no matter what. So,
wintertime open air adventure.
Yeah, and it's actually been lovely sitting here and just watching the sky, and no one knows where I am, and it just feels good.
Good.
Yeah. Anyway, so I don't have a particular thing. I think I just wanted to participate, and I've been doing the LBK class and the December support group and practicing all the time, and kind of getting identified a lot, and watching myself move in and out of that a lot. Just like everything just seems so much more vivid to me now, and I just feel very, very much in the thick of things, I guess.
And you know, that's such a fun. Well, the image that Vivid gave to me was. When they colorized, if that's the word, black and white movies, you know, so you're going along and the movie is in black and white, and then all of a sudden there's color.
Yeah.
And that's what, to me, that's what it's like to go from living in the world of conditioned mind to being awake and, as you say, in the thick of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like I'm just seeing so much. I just feel like I'm seeing so many things and yet still getting so caught up, and but it's so much shorter, and I mean it's intense. It's like, okay, I'm really in it now. I know I am. And then finding myself out of it, like in 15 minutes later, it's just amazing to me. Things that maybe I used to get caught up in for days.
Yeah.
And now.
Do you feel alive?
Yeah, I do feel alive. I do feel alive. Yeah, I really do. And there's so many things that I could talk about, but I just I just thought this was a new thing for me. I tried reflective listening myself to myself with the two chairs.
Oh yeah.
And
Karen, take just a minute and explain that for anybody who's listening and is not going to know what you're talking about. What are the mechanics of it?
Well, I put two chairs, and I had something I really wanted to look at. There's a part of me that I really wanted to talk to and really wanted to see what that was. And it's a part of me who feels like she suffers over other people's suffering. So it's very painful, and so I wanted to talk to her to see what is this, you know, like what is going on. So I had a chair for the listener, and then I had a chair for that part of me to talk. And so I just sat in the one chair and I think I just like we do with reflective listening, just like, okay, I'm ready and I'm listening. And then I switched chairs and it was like she started to talk, and I knew she was there because the sensations in my body were just so, it was just like instantly she was there. And she would talk, and then when she was done, I'd switch to the other chair, and then it was like she wasn't in there. She wasn't, those sensations weren't there, and I would reflect her, and then I'd sit back in the other chair, and then she'd talk. So is that what you mean by the mechanic?
Yes. It's an amazing process, isn't it? It sounds, when somebody explains it to you for the first time, you think, oh no, I can't picture that. And then you do it, and it's amazing how quickly an aspect of the personality will come out.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, as you're describing, how quickly we can completely disidentify and move into that reflecting and mentoring, we could say, role of somebody who is just open and compassionate and there and supportive.
Yeah. And I was just really completely taken back by what I found out. I mean, just things I had no awareness of what was going on. I saw so much that I actually stopped, because it was like that was all I could handle, and I'll go back from there and talk again.
It's always good with something like that to let her know that you're going to come back, right? And that she's going to get to talk again. You'll have another meeting. And many meetings, more and more meetings, as the relationship gets easier and she becomes more a part of your everyday life.
Well, she's certainly a part of my everyday life. She's a big influence in my life, but I didn't know what was going on. I didn't see.
Yes.
And
there's a difference between having her a part of your life with you disidentified from her.
Yes. Yeah.
And having her come in and take over your life.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. Which is to me the difference that you're describing in this.
Yes. Yeah. I identify with her. I mean, I become identified, and I just didn't know where that was coming from and why I was suffering so much over it. And anyway, so still lots to do there, but a very powerful new tool for me. And it was like the time was right, and I tried it, and it was really helpful for me.
That's great. Well, I'm so glad to hear you report on that. I think I was asking Dave recently if he would do a workshop or a retreat or whatever using that technique. Because it is so powerful.
Yeah.
And so look for it on the schedule. She might like to come along and participate in that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
So anyway, thank you. I just really wanted to call in, and I wasn't sure what I was going to talk about, but there it was. And
I think your instincts were good.
Good.
Yeah,
things are good. Yes, thank you.
Well, and your instinct about calling in, because that was really powerful, and I think it's very helpful for you to describe that process, because I have a feeling that after the show is over or soon in the future, there are going to be a lot of people taking advantage of testing out that tool and learning how to use it. So that was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, thank you. Okay.
Good night.
And I'll see you at the New Year's retreat. I'm going to come.
See you at Santa Sabina.
Yes. I'm going to meditate into the new year. Thank you.
Exactly. Thanks, Karen. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Karen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have one more caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Julie. I'm from Montreal.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well, and how are you?
I'm doing really well, doing good, yeah.
Doing okay. What's going on?
Well, I have a lot of your books, and there's the book The Key.
Uh-huh.
And there's one part of it I can't understand it when I read it. It's like I go numb or cold inside. And I was just wondering if I could read it to you and if you could comment on it.
Sure. Of course, you know, the most interesting thing to me is your reaction to it. But maybe we can explore both of those at the same time.
Okay, so the part is all that is required is that you accept that which is totally unacceptable to you.
Aha. Uh-huh. Mm. And that produces a feeling of numbness.
And almost like this lost sensation. What does she mean by that? Like, what am I supposed to do with that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, earlier, one of the people was talking about, it doesn't matter. I was going to go off in a direction that I suddenly realized might not be helpful to you. So all that is required is that we accept that which is totally unacceptable to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's the deal with that. There are a lot of things in this life that you accept.
Right. Yeah.
Is this true?
Yeah.
In fact, there are things in life that you accept about you and about others and about life that other people actually find unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is this true?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what that's pointing at is that there's nothing inherently unacceptable.
Mm.
It's that each of us struggles and suffers because of our relationship with certain pieces of content. So there are cultures where stealing is perfectly fine. The attitude is sort of, well, if you weren't taking care of it, you must not have cared that much about it, and I'm going to take good care of it, so it's mine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for us, of course, are we in agreement? Stealing is not a good thing to do. Yeah, okay. And so what we look at with that is, all right, that's a cultural thing. Not everybody believes it. Not everybody feels that way. Not everybody sees it that way. Now, what most conditioned people do then is say, okay, but they're wrong. Okay?
Yeah.
People who think it's okay to steal, they're immoral. They're wrong. They just haven't had the right teaching. They haven't seen the light.
Right.
Okay? Because if they did, they would realize that we're right and they're wrong and they would feel bad and they'd stop stealing. But it's all made up.
We could
make it up any way, and people have, in the length of time there have been people, you know, just darn near everything that human beings are capable of has been made up and decided that this is okay, or this thing to do, or this is, we in agreement on that?
Yeah.
And then people take sides. No, that's wrong. No, it's fine. And then everything in between. So you have this whole set of stuff that you have been taught or that you have agreed or however we want to frame that part of it is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you suffer because you hold those beliefs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you really suffer when you hold those beliefs and somebody else doesn't.
I see.
You know that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what if you're the only person who doesn't steal in a culture of people who steal?
So I guess within my own culture, what I, and within my own self,
yes,
what is not acceptable is causing me to suffer.
That's right. Now, can you give me what one of those is without...
Okay, I've called in before because I've lost 2 pregnancies. I'm not going to have children. This content or is not acceptable to me on some level. I find it hard to think about my life never giving birth to a child. So I can't change any of that. It is unacceptable. There was nothing wrong with me that happened, but I still struggle with the acceptance of it.
Yeah.
And
well, now
culture,
society's
questions about why I don't have children, I don't like answering it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Well, and it's amazing how people feel perfectly fine asking the most outrageous things of
That's
other
right.
people.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. To me, there are different aspects of this, and they might not all be matters of acceptance. So there, not being able to have children can actually not be in the realm of unacceptable.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Because it simply is.
Right. I shouldn't apply acceptance to something like that.
Precisely. Now, you can, you can rail against it.
Yeah.
You can, shake your little fist at God or, hate humanity or despise all parents or, you could go into a state of jealousy and envy and bitterness and
all of those have been visited.
yeah, we like to have varied experiences. And so to me, now I don't know if that's helpful to you, but to me it is helpful that there's no sense in resisting something that already is.
Well, I'm getting there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now then, what must be acceptable is all the ways you feel about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the advantage of accepting all of the ways you feel about it is that you don't have to let conditioning get you stuck in any one.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that's much more compassionate and helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
because it does vary my reaction on it.
Absolutely. And here's the thing that we can know. Conditioning is not compassionate at all. Egocentric karmic conditioning is incapable of compassion.
For
but
sure,
life,
yes.
Life is extremely, it, life is compassion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It has opened me up, this experience, to the compassion of life and the kindness of people who don't know anything about you or, people's kindness and sweetness.
Yeah.
And life, yeah.
And if somebody were standing outside the door and said, now you could have great growth experiences if you never had children. You want to sign on for that? You would say, absolutely not. Thank you very much. And yet, since those are the circumstances that you find yourself in, then being open to all that brings to your life can be tremendously rich and rewarding.
Well, I've experienced that. It has brought an incredible amount
and
openness to my life.
Yeah.
And compassion for other people and their suffering and struggles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for that,
and,
I would.
And, yeah, and who knows where it will lead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, good. Keep us posted, huh?
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us from Montreal. Sherry, it's been another great show.
I've enjoyed myself, Michael, and I've enjoyed you and all the callers.
Oh, thank you. It's a great pleasure and privilege to be a part of Open Air.
It is, isn't it?
It is. Indeed.
So I'll meet you here next week, good Lord willing, Creek Don't Rise, and all that sort of thing.
All that sort of thing.
Okay.
Thank you,
Michael.
Good night.
Good night.